ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरान्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। मुखं करोति वाचालं पङ्गुं लङ्घायितिः गिरिं यत्त्रिपातम् अहं वन्दे श्रीगुरुदीनतारिणिं परमानन्दमाधवं श्रीचैतन्येश्वरम्। नमो विष्णुपदाय कृष्णपृष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्त स्वामीति नामिने। नमस्ते सरस्वतीदेवी गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे, निर्विशेषा शून्यवादी पाश्चात्यदेशतारिणे। नमो महावेदन्याय कृष्णप्रेम प्रधायते कृष्णाय कृष्णचैतन्या नाम्ने गौरक्षे नमः। पञ्चतत्त्वात्मकं कृष्णं भक्तरूपस्वरूपकं भक्तावतारं भक्ताख्यं नमामि भक्तशक्तिकम्। हे कृष्णा करुणा सिन्धु दीनबन्धु जगत्पते, गोपेशा गोपिका कान्ता राधाकान्तः नमोऽस्तु ते। सप्तकाञ्चन गौराङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी, वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिय। वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्य प्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतगदाधर शिवासादि गौरभक्तवृन्द। हरे कृष्णा कृष्ण कृष्णा हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। सो लास्ट टाइम वी वर डिस्कसिंग फ्रॉम भगवद गीता चैप्टर 7 टेक्स्ट 2-4, दैट्स व्हाट वी डिस्कस लास्ट टाइम। एंड द ओवरऑल टॉपिक, द चैप्टर इज एंटाइटल्ड एज नॉलेज ऑफ द एब्सोल्यूट। And we discuss the overall flow of this chapter. The acronym for this chapter we used is HEAD. How to gain the actual knowledge, the real knowledge, that is hearing process. And then E means if somebody questions, where is God? Can you show me God? So the question comes, where God is not. He is everywhere. So H is the process of hearing. By hearing one can understand. And how to realize God? God is everywhere. And then it's up to us if we accept His presence or we reject His presence. And then the next portion of this chapter is Devi Devatas, demigods. Krishna differentiate, what is the difference in all the various Devi Devatas and the Supreme Lord. They are the representative of the Supreme Lord who are appointed as in charge of the various necessities of life. So we are discussing the first portion of this chapter where Krishna is establishing how to perceive the presence of God, how we can see God. And Krishna mentions how to see God. God is present everywhere, and he mentions some of the opulences of the Supreme Lord. Like in text 4, Krishna says, Bhumirapo nalo vayu, kham mano buddhir evacha, ahamkar ityam me bhinna prakartir ashtadaha. The earth, water, fire, air, ether, these are the gross elements. Above that is the subtle element, mind, intelligence, and false ego. And all these together, the 8 different elements, Krishna says they are my separated energies. So everything comes from Krishna. So there is nothing in this world where Krishna cannot be perceived. But the problem with people in general, we want to see everything or we want to accept anything which can be perceived by our senses. If we can see it, if we can touch it, taste it, smell it, then we accept as per the modern science. If we cannot perceive anything with our senses, that object is questionable, its presence is questionable. So sometimes people, they will accept the principle of karma, that yes, karma is there. If something good happening or something bad happening, that's maybe because of somebody's karma. Whatever we do, we reap the result of that. But still, they are not able to accept God. They will say everything is happening because of karma. Whatever you do, you will get accordingly. If you do something bad, you will get bad in life. If you do something good, good will come back to you. So they will say everything is happening because of karma. Where is God in picture? But ultimately, the point to understand is God is who has created this law of karma. If the law is there, it means the lawmaker has to be there too. Law abides. If the law is there, somebody has to be there who has made those laws. So laws employ a lawmaker. And to understand that point, when somebody says everybody is getting the reaction based on their karma, so where is God in picture? We can understand this based on maybe a simple example. If somebody is doing some study, somebody did a master's degree or MBA or something. So somebody has done his part of doing the study, getting that degree. Based on the principle of karma, as soon as one has finished the karma, finished that education, he should immediately get a job, right? The result of the study is that one get into occupation. But most of the time it doesn't happen for many people. They may be having finished the study but out of job. If it is just based on your karma, that as soon as I have finished my karma, so I deserve the reaction based on my karma, one may not be able to get the job as soon as finished the degree. So for somebody to get a job, somebody has to accept your education, accept your degree, accept your skill set. Somebody who has a master's degree or MBA or whatever particular field, they go to a different company, apply for the job. If the employer look at your degrees and your skill set, and accept that, yes, okay, I accept your degree, I can offer you a job. So he is rewarding you the result of your education by accepting your karma. But that also will happen because they also are in need. They also need somebody for their work. So they will accept your karma of studying and they will offer the result of your karma by giving you a job. The same way, until somebody accept our karma in general, we cannot get the result of our karma. God is the one who has created this system of karma, who is rewarding the result of our action, good action or bad action. In case of job, some employer is accepting the degree, but he himself is also in need of somebody to do the work. But in case of God, he has no need of accepting our karma. But still, out of his magnanimity, he is accepting our karma and giving us the result of our karma. So the law of karma itself also proves the existence of God. Somebody may say, I don't want to follow the laws of God. God, if God is there, I don't care and I don't want to accept the laws of God. It is not the matter of our acceptance. If we believe in God, if we believe in the laws of God or not, it applies to everybody. Nobody can escape from it. It's not that the law of karma applies to only Hindus. It applies to everybody. It's a universal principle, universal law. Like the law of gravity, it's a universal law. It's not only for Indians or Americans or Chinese or Pakistanis. It applies on everybody. The same way the law of karma applies on everybody. Nobody can escape from it. Somebody may say, for a particular country, somebody may say, oh, I don't like the law of this country. So if somebody doesn't like, one may leave that country and go to a different country. But in case of God's creation and God's law, somebody cannot say, oh, I don't believe in God's existence and the laws, laws of God. So one cannot go anywhere in the whole creation which does not come under God's jurisdiction. So everybody is controlled by and under the jurisdiction of God's creation and God's law. No matter if somebody believes in it or somebody doesn't believe in it. If somebody is an atheist or a theist, it applies on everybody. So there's a wonderful story describing this particular point. No matter if somebody believes in God or somebody defies the presence of God, but God is maintaining everybody. He is providing food for everybody, shelter for everybody, all the basic necessities of life for everybody. One time, one person, one devotee, he was staying in a motel or kind of a dharamshala. And in the early morning, he got up and started his morning sadhana. He was chanting the names of the Lord. And in the next room, somebody else was getting disturbed because of the sounds of chanting. And this guy came to this devotee and started shouting, oh, why are you chanting the name of God and so early in the morning? Let us sleep. And anyways, where is your God? Have you ever seen your God? You are just chanting the name so loudly and disturbing everybody. And this devotee, he said, God is everywhere and God is the one who is maintaining everybody and providing for everybody. And this atheist person started challenging, I don't believe in existence of God. I don't believe in God. So there was a challenge. This person challenged the Lord, if you can prove that God is maintaining everybody, I will start chanting the holy name. If you think God is maintaining everybody, God is providing food for everybody, if he can force me to eat, unless I want to eat, how can he force me to eat? So if God can force me to eat, I will believe in his existence. And if you cannot, then you have to stop chanting this holy name. So there was this condition set forth and this challenge was made. And this atheist person, he claimed, if God can force me to eat, so he was saying, it's my wish. If I don't want to do something, if I don't want to eat, if I want to harm myself, how can even God save me? So even God cannot do, if I don't want to eat, God even cannot nourish me. If you can prove that God can feed me against my desire also, I will believe in God's existence. So this atheist, he thought, to fulfill this challenge, I will go in the forest, hide somewhere, nobody can see me, nobody can find me, so how will anybody force me to eat anything? So he went in the forest, hid him in the tree, in some branches, that he thought, I will sit here all day and night and next morning I will go back and challenge this devotee that, see, I have won the condition. So that day he was sitting in the tree, hiding himself in the branches. By the time of afternoon, there were some visitors, they came there. Some passerby, the villagers, they were passing from there. They sat under the tree. They opened up their lunch boxes, arranged all the food there. And as they were about to eat, they heard the voices of some horses and some dacoits coming. So they ran away from that place to protect themselves. All these dacoits came there, so they sat under the tree. They saw all these nice food. They say, wow, somebody has left this food here, so let's enjoy. They all came, sat down, and as they were about to eat the food, one of the dacoits said, maybe somebody knew we are coming here, we are passing by from here, and it is a trick or it is a trap for us. Maybe there is some poison mixed in this food to kill all of us. So let's search if somebody is hiding here and watching us and trying to see if we will eat this food. So they started searching everywhere. And then finally, on that tree, in the branches, they saw this person hiding. They pulled him down and they started beating him up. Have you put this all the food here? Are you trying to spy on us? Are you trying to kill us? Is there some poison mixed in this? So he said, no, I'm just hiding here from, I'm hiding myself from somebody here. I did not do anything. Please let me go. And they said, no, now you have to eat this food. And this person was saying, no, I don't want to eat this food. Otherwise, I will lose my condition. And these dacoits started beating him up and forcing the food in his mouth. No, you have to eat this. Otherwise, we will not let you go. So they forcibly fed that person whatever was left there. So the point is, even if somebody challenges God's presence, God's maintenance, that God is not maintaining everybody, it's we who are maintaining ourselves. At the most, this is the nature who is providing for everything. But ultimately, God is the one who is providing everything. And He can force us against our wish also if He wants to maintain us. Rakhe Krishna mare ke, mare Krishna rakhe ke. If Krishna wants to kill somebody, nobody can protect him. And if Krishna is protecting somebody, nobody can harm him. If Krishna is protecting us, we ourselves cannot harm ourselves. If somebody is trying to commit suicide, but Krishna has a different plan for him, the suicide attempt will not be successful. So, ultimately he lost the condition and finally he accepted the presence of God and became a devotee. So God is present everywhere. It is up to us how we can see God everywhere. And Krishna is showing here with these verses, He is telling us, giving the indication how to perceive God everywhere. All the material elements we see all around us, they are also Krishna's creation. And all these are Krishna saying, my separated energies. So we discussed that point last time. Now moving on to the next verse, which is text 5. Apreyam itvastva anyam prakartim vidhime param jiva bhutam mahabaho yaedam dharyate jagat. Besides these, O mighty armed Arjuna, there is another superior energy of mine, which comprises the living entity who are exploiting the resources of this material inferior nature. So Krishna is saying there are two types of energies, the material energy and spiritual energy. All those eight elements described in the previous verse, they are all the material energies. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, false ego. But apart from that, there is a higher energy, higher spiritual nature, the living entity, Jiva, the soul. Jiva Bhutam Mahabaho. Yayedam Dharyate Jagat. So that is the living entity which is exploiting the resources of this material, inferior energy. So there is Apara and Para. Two words used. Apara refers to the inferior energy and para refers to superior energy. So because of the presence of superior energy, which is the soul, Jiva, that's why the whole world is maintained. For example, the prison is maintained for prisoners. So same way this material world is maintained for the living entity, maintained for the Jivas. But who is maintaining this material world? Is it that the living entity, the Jiva itself, is maintaining this material world? Or somebody superior, even to Jiva, is maintaining this material world? So in the example of prison house, so there is prisoner. and the prison house, but the prison house is not maintained by the prisoner. There is somebody who is maintaining the prison house, like the jailer or the government who is maintaining that prison house. And it is maintained for prisoners. The same way this material world is maintained for the living entity by the Supreme Lord through his various resources. Even if people may claim, oh, living entity is maintaining this world. But is the living entity the Supreme? If the prisoner is maintaining the prison house, then why he has to be there in the prison house? He can go out of the prison house anytime. So this is the superior energy, which is for whom everything is being maintained. And this living entity try to exploit the resources of this material world. The material world is as a prison house, but here also if somebody goes, they want to enjoy the facilities of the prison house. In purpose, the Supreme Lord Krishna is the only controller and all the living entities are controlled by him. These living entities are his superior energy because the quality of their existence is one and the same with the Supreme. But they are never equal to the Lord in quantity. While exploiting the gross and subtle inferior energy, the superior energy living entity forgets his real spiritual mind and intelligence. This forgetfulness is due to the influence of matter upon the living entity. But when the living entity becomes free from the influence of this illusory material energy, he attains a stage called mukti or liberation. So the living entity is covered up by the material energy and he starts identifying himself with this material energy. And that is the root cause of bondage. But when somebody comes back to its original state, comes out of the illusion that I am not the part of this material world, I don't belong to this material energy, he attains a stage of liberation. And Krishna says, Etad yonini bhutani sarveyanti upadharayah aham krutvasya jagatah prabhavo pralayasya tathah. All created beings have their source in these two natures, of all that is material and all that is spiritual in this world. Know for certain that I am both the origin and the dissolution. So here Krishna clearly saying again, I am the source of both the material energy and the spiritual energy. I am the origin of everything and I am the cause of annihilation. Everything comes from me. Matter and spirit both come from Krishna. And whatever is made from these two types of energy, that all has its source from Krishna. So the living entity comes from Krishna and it is meant for the service and pleasure of Krishna. So Krishna is the Supreme Lord, as a Supreme Being, is the basic field of creation. And matter is created by the Supreme Lord. As a small child may create a toy and start thinking, oh, I have created this wonderful sand castle or something other from the small pebbles, small stones. Same way a big man may create a big skyscraper. But ultimately the Supreme Lord is the cause of everything because all the material, all the raw material, infrastructure, everything comes from the Supreme Lord. So everything that exists is a product of matter and spirit. Spirit is the basic field of creation and matter is created by spirit. Spirit is not created at a certain stage of material development. Rather, this material world is manifested only on the basis of spiritual energy. This material body is developed because spirit is present within matter. So Prabhupada gives the example here. As a child grows gradually to boyhood and then to manhood, because that superior energy, spirit soul is present. Similarly, the entire cosmic manifestation of this gigantic universe is developed because of the presence of super soul, Vishnu. If the living entity the jiva, the soul, is not present inside the body, that body will not grow. The same way within this universe, whatever is coming in existence is because of the presence of the super soul. And up to here, somebody may say, okay, I can understand, maybe God is here. I accept the existence of God. But then who is God? How to perceive God? Many people have different conceptions. Even after understanding God, a lot of people do mistakes. Yahan par aake sab log kuch golmaal gadbad kar dete hain. Somebody will say, okay, I understand God is there, but God is just some energy. Bhagwan Shakti hai. Somebody will say, God is just light. And some people even claim, oh, yes, God was there. God created everything. But then at some point of time, everything went out of control of God's hand. Somebody will say, God is dead. God is there. God was there, but now he's dead. He's gone now. For example, Krishna was shooted by the hunter Jara. So God is dead now. But people don't understand the appearance and disappearance of God is like the sun rising in the morning and setting in the evening. If we see sun in the morning, we know the sun has come out. It's not that sun has just now taken birth. Sun was already there. Now he has appeared in front of our eyes. And same way in the evening when sun sets, it's not does not mean that sun is now dead. He has disappeared from our eyes, but he is still present somewhere. The same way God appears in this material world, perform his leela, and then disappear from our eyes. So appearance and disappearance of Krishna are like appearance and disappearance of sun. Sun rising in the morning and setting in the evening. So everybody has different conception about God. Somebody will say, yeah, there are many gods. This devta is also God. This devi is also God. You are also God. I am also God. Or you can become God. I can become God. So there is generally this question comes up. If God is there, is God a person or he is impersonal? Is Bhagwan sakar hai ke nirakar hai? Sagun hai ke nirgun hai? Bhagavatam actually clearly answers this question. God is both sagun and nirgun. Bhagwan sakar bhi hai aur nirakar bhi hai. Bhagavatam, 1st canto, 2nd chapter, 12th verse, Shukdev Goswami mentions, Vadanti sat tattva vidha tattvam yat jnanam advayam brahmeti pramatmeti bhagwaniti shabdyate. The Supreme Lord is realized in three different aspects. As the Supreme Brahman, as the localized Paramatma feature, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Bhagwan nirakar hai apne brahma savroop mein. He is everywhere. He is present everywhere in the form of his effulgence, which is Brahman. And Bhagwan, the Supreme Lord, is present everywhere in everybody's heart as localized feature as Paramatma. And then he is present in his supreme spiritual form, in his supreme abode. That is the ultimate realization of the Supreme Lord. Like the sun can be understood in three aspects. Sun has its globe, the surface of the sun. Then it has the sun rays, and there is a personality of sun god, Bhivaswan, who is residing in that sun globe, sun planet. So there are three aspects, the localized personality of sun, the sun surface itself, and then the rays of sun. So same way, the rays of the Supreme Lord, that is the Brahman aspect, the localized aspect of Paramatma, and then the Supreme Personality of God and in his personal form, as Lord Krishna, Lord Ram, Lord Vishnu, that is the Supreme Lord. So here, this verse become very important because Krishna is answering that question very clearly here. If God is personal or impersonal, what is the actual svarup of God? So text 7, Krishna says, Mattha paratram nanyat kinchit asti dhananjaya. मयि सर्वम् इदं प्रोतं सूत्रे मणिगण एव. ओ कॉन्करर ऑफ वेल्थ, there is no truth superior to me. Everything rests upon me as pearls are strung on a thread. So let's take this verse into two portions. So in the first portion, Krishna says, mattah paratram nanyat. There is nothing which is superior to me. As I stand in front of you in my personal form, there is nothing else which is superior to this. Now if somebody says Bhagwan nirakar hai, beyond Krishna there is the impersonal Brahman, we have to surrender to that impersonal Brahman. But here Krishna is very clearly saying there is nothing superior to me as I am standing in front of you in this form. So one should understand the personality of Godhead. That is the ultimate realization of the Lord. And all other aspects, the impersonal Brahman and the Paramatma aspect, they are subordinate aspects of that supreme personality of Godhead. And how to perceive the presence of God, how to see the hand of God in everything in this whole creation. So Krishna is giving a very beautiful example here. Everything rests upon me as the pearls are strung on a thread. If we see a nice pearl necklace, in the necklace you see all these pearls, small or big. And all these pearls are actually lying on a thread, but the underlying thread is not visible. If somebody, if he does not know, he will say, oh, what a wonderful magic that all these pearls are just standing like that. But an intelligent person know that there is a support of thread which is passing through all these pearls and keeping them together. If the thread is broken, all these pearls will fall down. They will be scattered. The same with this whole universe. We see all these so many wonderful things in this universe, so many planets and stars and galaxies, and everything is staying in its position. How? Krishna is saying everything rests upon me. I am the underlying thread which is keeping everything in their position. So the analogy used is of the bead strung on a thread. So similarly, all the individual souls, they have their free will to act as they wish. It is only granted to them by the Lord, who is upholding all of them and within whom everything exists. So that's why Shvetavashtara Upanishad, it states that there is nothing equal to God, nor is there anything superior to Him. So this verse of Bhagavad Gita, it dispels all the doubt in the mind of many people who suppose that Krishna is not the absolute truth and speculate that there must be some formless entity that is the ultimate source of even Krishna. But this verse, it clearly states that this personal form of Lord Krishna, as he is standing in front of Arjuna, that is the ultimate supreme truth. So that's why Brahma ji prays to Lord Krishna, Ishwarah Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anadhir Adhir Govindah Sarav Karanah Karanam. So in Brahma Samhita, this is a wonderful prayer offered by Lord Brahma. Ishwarah Parama Krishna, Lord Krishna is the Supreme Lord. He is eternal, omniscient. He is full of bliss. He is without the beginning and end. He is the origin of everything, and He is the cause of all causes. So Krishna is saying here, there is nothing superior to me. No other form, no impersonal Brahman or Paramatma aspect, nothing is superior to me. I am the Supreme Lord. And there is a wonderful story trying to understand who is supreme. Last time in Sri Ram Katha. I was mentioning this point. In India, generally in Hinduism, people have this concept of Trinity, Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh. And people consider Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh, all are equal, all are the absolute supreme lord, everybody is equal. But there are many pastimes, so many pastimes which indicate the concept of Trinity is there, that is correct, but it does not mean all of them are equal at the same level and all are the supreme lord. So once all the Devi Devatas, all the great sages, everybody, they wanted to find out among Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh, who is the supreme lord. And Bhrigu Muni was appointed to help resolve this question in everybody's mind. Among Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh, who is supreme? Who is superior? So Bhrigu Muni, to fulfill his job, so first he went to Brahma. And as he came in front of Brahma, Lord Brahma was sitting on his asana. Bhrigu did not offer any obeisances, any respect to Brahma. Brahma welcomed Bhrigu Muni, but in his mind, he was offended. Bhrigu Muni did not verbally or physically offend Brahma, but Brahma was offended for not being paid respect. Bhrigu Muni left that place, and then after that he came to Lord Shiva. As he came to Kailash, Lord Shiva received him. And as Lord Shiva was coming closer and trying to embrace Bhrigu, Bhrigu started blaspheming Lord Shiva. He verbally blasphemed on Lord Shiva that you are staying in the company of ghosts and hobgoblins. You are putting the dust of the ashes of crematorium ground on your body. You are not in a clean condition. Don't touch me. So he verbally insulted Shiva. And Shiva got angry. He ran behind Bhrigu taking his trishul. So Bhrigu Muni left that place, came to Vaikuntha. So as he came to Vaikuntha in front of Lord Vishnu was sitting on his asana. Lord Vishnu got up from his seat, came to receive Bhrigu Muni, and Bhrigu Muni attacked Lord Vishnu by hitting his foot on his chest. Even though being hit by Bhrigu Muni on his chest, Lord Vishnu did not become offended. Rather, he held on to Bhrigu Muni's foot and said, "Your soft feet must have been hurt. My chest is so hard." So in all these three cases, for Brahma, Bhrigu Muni only mentally offended by not paying obeisances, and Brahma was insulted. Shiva, Bhrigu has insulted him verbally. But for Lord Vishnu, he insulted him by physically attacking on him. But still Lord Vishnu did not took any offense. He did not take any offense of Bhrigu's action. So Bhrigu was able to understand, out of three, who is the Supreme Lord. He is beyond any of these honor, dishonor, all these prestige and all. He is self-satisfied, Atmaram. He is full of bliss. All these things does not matter. So the conclusion, Lord Vishnu is the Supreme, Krishna, Lord Ram, they are the Supreme Lord, different forms of the same Lord. So Bhrigu Muni did this whole exercise to find out. He attacked Lord Vishnu. At that time, Lakshmi Devi Ji, she resided on the chest of Lord Vishnu, Shri Vatsa Rekha, that is Lakshmi Ji. So when Bhrigu attacked, Lakshmi was offended and she cursed Bhrigu Muni that you have offended Lord Vishnu, I curse you up. From now on, all the Brahmanas, they will be without Lakshmi. Jo Brahmana hai, sab log nirdhan rahenge, Lakshmi vihin ho jayenge. Because of Lakshmi's curse, all the Brahmanas, they are not very rich. They generally are considered as poor, as sustaining themselves by begging from others. But the point of the story was to show here who is the Supreme Lord. Krishna saying, there is no truth superior to me. There is another story. Lord Brahma came to test little Krishna in Vrindavan. Even all these demigods, Devi Devatas, they are bewildered by Krishna's pastime, Krishna's activity. They think, oh, this is a small child, maybe some magician, some supernatural powers, but he cannot be the Supreme Lord. How can Supreme Lord act like that, like a small little boy wandering here and there, playing with other boys and all? So Brahma came to test. And to test Krishna, he stole all the calves. And then as Krishna went to search for the calves, he stole all the other cowherd boys also who were taking their lunch and hid all the boys and calves in a cave. Just 1 minute later, Brahma realized, oh, maybe Krishna is the Supreme Lord. I have made a big mistake. So he came back to see what is happening. By that time, Brahma's 1 minute is like 1 year on Earth planet. And this whole for 1 year, Krishna had expanded himself in all those calves and all those cowherd boys, exact in their form and shape, and living like that. And Brahma was perplexed. He went back to look in the cave. The boys are there, came back here. Everybody is here also. So his head was spinning. He came to his senses that Krishna is the Supreme Lord. He is omnipresent and he can expand himself into innumerable forms. There is no dearth to Krishna's opulences, Krishna's potency. So Prabhupada is quoting the verse here from Shvetashtvara Upanishad. It says, there is no truth superior to that Supreme Person because he is the supermost. He is smaller than the smallest and he is greater than the greatest. He is situated as a silent tree and he illumines the transcendental sky. And as a tree spreads its root, he spreads his extensive energies. So from this verse also, one concludes that Supreme Absolute Truth is the Supreme Personality of Godhead who is all-pervading by his multi-energies, both material and spiritual. So I think I will stop here because if we move on to next verses, it will get a little later. Shrima Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda ki jai. If anybody has any question, comment.
Hare Krishna Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Prabhu.
Prabhu, you mentioned that Krishna is standing in front of Arjuna and he's saying that everything is strung on a thread like a pulse. Yes, you mentioned he's standing physically and telling. So how to understand that? I didn't get it clear.
No.
How to understand?
I'm saying the example, the point I mentioned was Krishna is saying there is no truth superior to me. No truth superior to me. So we generally people say sometime, oh, Krishna is not the Supreme Lord. There is something beyond Krishna, the impersonal Brahman that is superior to Krishna. So here Krishna is saying, as I am standing in front of you in this my personal form, that is a superior most form. There is nothing superior to this. And the other example is Krishna is saying everything rests upon me as pearls are strung on a thread. That as a thread is holding all the pearls in a necklace, the same way Krishna is holding everything in this whole creation in their respective positions. All these planets and everything, how they are staying in their position, Krishna is saying, I am the underlying thread who is holding everything. So it's not that Krishna has to, in his personal form, has to hold on his hands all these planets. Through his superior energy, spiritual energy, he is holding all these objects in their respective places.
Okay.
So Krishna is not represented here as a Greek god who is holding the earth on his shoulder. And it is shown that, oh, that Greek god is tired holding the earth on his shoulder and he is bending down. And so Krishna is not like that. He is holding everything in this whole universe. He is maintaining everything. And everything is working perfectly in Krishna's creation. And Krishna's multi-energies, the multi-form energies are maintaining and holding everything. Krishna has put together a perfect system, the perfect laws, which are working under the direction of Krishna. It's not just the material energy or the material nature which is working by itself. There is a system put together by Krishna, the laws created by Krishna, under whose direction this material energy is working. Maya adhyakshena prakriti suhiyate sacharacharam. Krishna says that in Bhagavad Gita also. This material energy is working under my direction.
Okay, Prabhu. So the proper note here, that whether it is personal or impersonal, as far as the Bhagavad Gita concern, the absolute truth is personality of Godhead, the Sri Krishna.
Yes. So the different aspects of God are there, the Brahman and Paramatma and the Supreme Lord, but the ultimate truth, the absolute truth, is the personality of Godhead.
Okay.
So that's what this verse is indicating. There is no truth superior to me, superior to the personal form of Krishna.
Yes, Prabhu. In Bhagavad Gita, it is very clear that the personal form is there and that is the Supreme.
Yeah. So it's understanding, right? So we have to understand that people may take some verses of Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam and they can derive the meaning as impersonalism. But if we understand it with a proper bona fide commentary, we can understand what is the real meaning of that. As I was saying, it's not the words, it's the meaning which cause problem. So we need to listen to the authorized sources, the bona fide sources, and read the commentary from bona fide sources, as Srila Prabhupada has given in Bhagavad Gita as it is. The very clear understanding, word by word meaning.
Yes, Prabhu. True. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else has any question or comment?
Very good class, Prabhu, and very good examples. I mean, such a complex topic, but very, very, very simply explained. Or they explained in very simple terms. Thank you, Prabhu.
Thank you, Prabhu. Okay, if no other questions or comments, we'll stop here. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you very much.